Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Season 3, episode 4 of Only Murders in the Building, The White Room, is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. That's right. It's the Only Murders podcast in the post-show recaps feed, where we're breaking down Hulu's third series, episode by episode. And in case you haven't noticed by this unfamiliar voice at the top of your episode, I'm Troy, not Josh. That's right. We swapped some seats. Hopefully you're doing okay with me kicking us off here. Josh, not able to join us today, but that does not mean that our other podcast chair is left open. Why on earth would we do that? We have an important episode to discuss. Episode 4, The White Room. And I can think of no one better to join us here as a special guest. Some may call her the Cinda Canning of post-show recaps, but that would be absolutely nonsensical whatsoever. Please welcome our special guest, Jess Sterling. Hello, Jess, and welcome to the Only Murders podcast.
Hi, I'm just here in my happy place, podcasting as always. So delighted to join you here today. I can't wait to talk whodunits, essentially.
Who's done it? If that's the plural, mm-hmm. We may have multiple murderers here. In case you have not caught on to our podcast here, this is a spoiler-filled podcast for the most recent episode. So if you've not yet watched episode 4, The White Room, please go do that now, because we are going to talk all about it. Jess, your bona fides are well known among the PSR community, but for anyone who isn't familiar, for whom you're just joining us, you podcast about some other things here. You also may be the Jess behind the curtain on a few things here.
It's certainly possible that I've been writing these quick plot recaps that Josh is forced to read every podcast. Do I get a little bit of a sick delight out of listening to him be forced to say that someone fingered Dickie? Yes, of course I do. But you know what? He told me to do it, and now he has to reap what he has sowed and read what I write on the podcast.
This is the comeuppance. This is the comeuppance, right? Well, you get the good fortune, and now this time, of watching me live try to read mm-hmm. off of your notes. You get to be like the audience here while our good friend Charles Hayden Savage is on stage. Will I enter the White Room and start spewing obscenities? I don't know. Mm-hmm. The only time will tell. Here's what I can promise you. If for some reason I take off my pants, no one's going to see it.
It's true.
Because not only are we a mostly audio format, but for those of you who are watching on video, you're only getting from the chest up here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really got to cover my bases, Jess.
Yeah, this is fair. I would be terrified as to what I would do if I ever were to enter the White Room. I'm sure it would be loud and a bit wild, but if I ever go off the deep end, I just feel like you got to watch out because it's not going to be good.
Yeah, look, you know, that's why you have other people there to support you and protect you. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what happened to Charles on stage and were the other people in the room good doing right by him? Good scene partners? Were they really following the ethos of a good theater crew? I'm not so sure. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about this episode and this season. If you have not already, and you would like to become a patron of Post Show Recaps, you can certainly do that by going to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You can join me and Jess and Josh and Ralphie and many others in the patron Discord. If you want to follow more episodes of Only Murders in the Building, our podcast here, you can go to postshowrecaps.com/onlymurders, where you will get only the Only Murders podcast episodes. Jess, we covered in our last podcast with me and Josh together our steak picks, our potato picks, and we just generally kind of created a solid foundation of carbs and meat to base this season on. Before we get into episode 4, let me just check in with you. Through episodes 1 through 3, now tacking on 4, how are you feeling about this season so far?
I'm really liking this season. I have a feeling that by the end, it will probably fall second in my rankings. I still think the original season, number one, is probably still going to be my favorite. But I'm really loving this. I don't know. There is something so delightful about having Oliver trying to make a musical called Death Rattle Dazzle. Yeah, okay, Death Rattle Dazzle. I'm like, that's it, right? That's incredible. I'm really enjoying, obviously Meryl Streep, right? Like, hello, Meryl Streep is on our show. Incredible. And I do think there are a lot of interesting side characters, and picking out who done it this season is really interesting. And I mean, I feel like it's no surprise to anyone that seeing Paul Rudd on my television screen is automatically going to give any season of television bonus points. So I'm really, really enjoying it. I think that every episode they're doing a really good job at setting up. Oh, wait, no. Let's move away from that target. Now focus your attention on this person. And every episode they get me because I'm like, wait a minute, could be? Like, is it possible that another one of Charles's girlfriends is a killer? Like, does he have a type?
Entirely possible, right? As of the end of episode 4 and the very, very end of episode 4, we have got a new leader in the clubhouse for the most sus. And it seems to be Joy. So I'm very intrigued by this. I'm intrigued by the fact that the roulette of responsibility, that wheel just keeps on spinning. And so I guess I should ask this, and you don't have to firm up a pick right now. You can do it at the end of the episode. But as you look at our steak picks and our potato picks that Josh and I have here, Josh, just as a reminder, has a steak pick of Robert. I have a steak pick of Dicky as the primary culprit. I have a potato pick of Loretta. Josh has a potato pick of the producers, Donna and Clifford. Jess, if you were to make a steak pick right now, would it have been one of those four?
I feel like Taubert and Dicky were kind of the top of my suspect list to begin with. Loretta feels like, gosh, you have Meryl Streep, so pick Meryl Streep. But then you big brain it and you're like, but wait a minute, it's Meryl Streep. Is it really going to be Meryl Streep? And then you realize you've said Meryl Streep about 50 times and you really don't know if you should pick her or not. But I think there is just something so suspicious about Dicky. I feel like he's hanging around a lot. And this actor, right? Like, he just... he gives sus vibes. He's played by Jeremy Shamos. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And I can't help but recognize him from Better Call Saul. And he just gives me sus vibes. So if I had to, like, nail down a pick, it would be Dickie. I'll go along with your steak pick of Dickie.
Okay, so you might double down on the steak pick. We might have a double steak burger situation going on here. I think we can unpack this a little bit more as we go into this particular episode. But four episodes in, that's the one that's feeling strongest to you, with maybe a little side, maybe a little potato pick of Loretta, because the Meryl Streep of it all seems like it's appealing to you.
You just can't ignore that Meryl Streep is on your screen, and you're like, how are they not going to make her be the killer, right?
Yes.
Because it's Meryl freaking Streep.
I know, but this is the thing. It's like so obvious, but then it's so obvious that they wouldn't do it, and you're double, triple bluffing yourself. And exactly. Then suddenly you're in the white room, which I think is probably a good enough time now to talk through this episode specifically. What have we gotten ourselves into? This particular episode, I'll just say, like, the weirdest episode of the season so far.
Definitely.
In the most delightful way.
Yeah, it's really intriguing. Just having the target shift so quickly off of Kimber was quite surprising to me. Having it like shift entirely to a new person, and not just a new person, but someone who Charles is involved with and now lives with. And we learn all about her fish and all this other, like, these weird personality quirks that she has.
Yeah, lots of new things got added into the mix. Just when you thought the middle streak of the season was going to be, not the Meryl streak, the middle streak was going to be where we unpack all of the things that were put on the table. We're still adding, right? This is like Andrea Martin and My Big Fat Greek Wedding. We're just adding more and more food to the plate here, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we've done here in episode four. Let's do a quick little plot recap for those that are listening along, but for some reason are not watching along. That's fine. We got you covered. Episode four of season three, The White Room, is written by J.J. Philbin. We had guest stars of Andrea Martin as Joy, which you may know from My Big Fat Greek Wedding or Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And we also had the return of Tina Fey as Cinda Canning. It's Tina Fey. You know who that is.
Yes. If you don't, where you been?
Yeah, right. Give us a call. Just add us on Twitter. Find us. We'll loop you in on who Tina Fey is.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So let's talk about what happened on this episode. Here we go, Jess. You're going to watch me read what you wrote. Give me notes afterward. I really appreciate it. Go to your happy place, everyone, because we're about to recap The White Room. Charles, Joy, and her 62 fish have moved in together. Unfortunately, the combination of this sudden change and the pressure for Charles to perform a patter song, which, by the way, is a fast-paced, informative song for not-so-talented singers, causes Charles to freak out. He suddenly ends up in the White Room, ironically, while blacking out, and when he comes to, he said some pretty awful things. This is stressing Oliver out, who is already tense because he cannot figure out how to ask out Loretta. who he claims to now be in love with. Mabel is frustrated with both of them, as she is seemingly the only one who cares to solve Ben's murder. Her main suspect is still Kimber, who doesn't have her Ben Glenroy hanky and was rumored to have been in a relationship with him. Her suspicions deepen when she finds out that Ben used Kimber's homemade serum prior to opening night. When Mabel and Oliver arrive at the theater to investigate, thanks to Howard and his love of Mabel's sweaters, they find Kimber in her dressing room. Turns out Kimber and Ben weren't in a relationship. Kimber just wanted him to endorse her serum, and when he backed out, she sold his hanky on eBay for cash. Kimber does mention a red mark on Ben's face, which gets Mabel's wheels turning. Meanwhile, Oliver and Charles discover a message on Ben Glenroy's dressing room mirror in lipstick saying, "Effing pig." Mabel pockets the lipstick, thinking whomever owns it must be the murderer. Mabel also meets with Cinda Canning, who has been attempting to get into contact with Mabel to team up and create a podcast together. Mabel's loyalty to the Only Murders trio beats out her investigative instincts, and she rejects Cinda, preferring to stay with the guys, even if she does have to wipe food off their chins occasionally. Charles attempts to end things with Joy, thinking he's just meant to be alone. But he goes to the White Room, and when he comes to, he's proposed! Joy says yes! And to make matters worse, Mabel and Oliver enter, and Joy is overjoyed to see that Mabel has her missing red lipstick. Could another one of Charles's partners be a killer?
Incredible.
Dun, dun, dun!
Wild. Like, absolutely wild that they bring in the character of Joy. And could she be another? Wasn't it Jan last season? Another J name too. Another three-letter J name.
Two seasons ago. But yeah,
last season
was Becky Butler, right?
That's right.
AKA Poppy. Effing Poppy. We'll edit that out.
Yeah, so it's wild. I think this is, I mean, I, like I said before, I was surprised to see them move off of the target of Kimber so quickly. It makes me kind of wonder if we're going to spend this season with, like, every episode, another suspect, right? Mm. If we're kind of going to, like, spin the wheel and see who's up this week, who on the cast is suspicious this week. And maybe last time it was Kimber's turn, and now it's Joy's turn. And what is going to happen with Charles's proposal? Like, how do you possibly explain this and get out of it?
I love that this is where we ended, right? Because on the one hand, yes, it does set up the kind of wheel of misfortune, the monster of the week, the murderer of the week type scenario, where mm-hmm. every episode we're ending with the finger pointing at someone new. But what has really happened here is the stakes have been raised incredibly for Charles professionally and personally, because now he is stuck in this musical, he's stuck in this relationship, and things are just getting worse and worse. I was concerned. I will say this. I was concerned last episode, and I don't know if we talked about this while we were recording, but I certainly talked about it with Josh afterward. I have been most interested in the Oliver and the musical storylines,
yeah.
And I found the Charles and Mabel of it all to just be lacking.
Okay.
This brings me totally back to being interested in what's happening with Charles, and now with the return of Cinda Canning, what's interested in Mabel. So, or what's interesting with them. So for me, it puts Steve Martin in his most awkward and fun way, but again, sets us up for a lot of confusion in the coming episodes.
Yeah, and you understand why Charles is kind of losing it at this point, right? Because his personal life seems to be a bit hellish, having to deal with Joy constantly bringing in new fish and just having, like, trampolines and exercise balls and just kind of cohabitating with someone isn't always easy, especially when they have a lot of stuff that maybe you're just not super keen on.
Are we speaking from experience here?
Luckily, I've never dated anybody with a massive, massive fish tank. But I don't think I would be all in on Joy's hobbies.
Yeah, that's let's start here. Okay. So like rank order the problem. Like if you are cohabitating with someone and the options are like giant fish tank, trampoline, exercise balls, which one are you most okay with? Which one's causing the biggest problem?
Trampoline feels easy enough to put away. So probably that I would be happiest to have around the house. Plus trampoline's like, you want to bounce sometimes, you know, a little bounce here and there isn't bad.
Okay.
I feel like second best is the exercise balls because same kind of situation. You want to bounce occasionally.
Throw it in a closet,
They're a little big though, right? They're a little, I think you can maybe deflate them, but if you're taking them in and out all the time, doesn't really seem, you know, an easy way to do things. The fish is my number one problem.
Oh my gosh.
And the reason is, one, fish tanks take up so much space. And I'm not a fan. If you like fish, like more power to you. I want a pet that I can pet. Like I want a fuzzy pet. If a pet's not fuzzy, I don't want it.
You could pet a fish. I'm not saying you should. Like people who have fish tell me like it'll probably hurt the fish. You probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But, like, you could.
Yeah. It's just, it seems like, and it's not even just that she has fish, right? Because if you were like, this is my goldfish. I've had it for 15 years. I got it at a fair when I was 10. I didn't expect it to live this long. Okay, great. That sounds perfect to me. But if you have a massive fish tank of 60 something fish and you are constantly buying
more. You're
going
to the fish store 3 times a day.
It's an addiction at this point.
It's a problem. It is absolutely a problem. And like, look, this is no hate. We're not here to fish shame or anything like that. But it's a lot. I do think if you have more than, let's say, 10 fish, if you have a tank that is larger than a desk, like, you got to disclose that. Like, you got to put that on the apps when you're creating your profile.
You're running up my electricity bill.
Yeah, well, and it's just like, I now, 62 fish, okay? Now the math part of my brain is like, there are 365 days in a year. If any given day one of those fish could die, that means once every 6 days, I'm walking in and you got a dead fish.
It's too much. It's too much sorrow and despair and responsibility. Like, I feel like it's easier to take care of a single dog than it is 62 fish.
Depends on the dog. Depends on the dog. Fair. I know your dog. Your dog could be a challenge, but
that's fair.
But I will say this, like, if you got to a point where you can't name and identify the fish individually, we're done here. Look, this is not a podcast about the fish, but like, 62. That's
62 fish.
Also, do we have any clues that Joy was capable of this insanity?
I feel like when we met Joy, she did feel, I guess I would just say, like a lot to me, right? Her personality, she's very extroverted. She just instantly, right? She's very joyful, that as her name would indicate. So I'm not exactly surprised that she has this like very excitable energy about her, but I don't know that it always works so well contrasted against Charles, who can be a bit of a grumpus, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, he's an old man. He's been single for a long time. He's an actor.
Making omelets.
Yeah. Look, what's he going to do? Is he going to cook fish in the morning? Like, this is going to be a problem. Do you think she eats fish? Right? I don't think she eats fish.
She can't. Whatever the opposite of a pescatarian is.
Yeah, right. So here's my thing. Okay, with the fish thing, that's a lot. But is Joy a murderer? Like, are we putting her to the top of the list now?
I mean, I think the show wants us to. I mean, it is her lipstick. But if she... I guess the question is, what is the red mark that was on Ben's face, right? Was she touching him up? Like, how did her lipstick get back there? I mean, she is the makeup artist, so I don't think it's that strange that her stuff would be found back there. I think the worst part of all of this is that the message was written in her lipstick. So how did somebody else come in possession of her lipstick?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're almost certainly, like, I have to imagine we're going to find out that, like, she wrote the message, but it's because she hates him. Does that mean that she killed him? We don't know, right?
Well, and you have to wonder, too, we know that Charles doesn't like Ben.
That's right. And
I mean, was he going home and talking to Joy about how annoying Ben was and how much he didn't like, you know?
What else are you going to do? You're going to talk about the fish? No. Right?
Oh my God, did you see what this fish did to this fish today?
I've been staring at them for a long time. I think I think that one's really starting to like me. Like, no. I do think, like, the motive here is very clear, which is she believes she's being protective of Charles. Yes. And she has opportunity and access to the victim. Not only was she obviously in the theater that night and potentially the one who was doing touch up on Ben's face, she was also at the Arconia when he was killed. So, you know, this is something I pointed out after our last episode and really regret not getting on the record. Yes. But if you were a patron in our Discord, you did see that I made a comment about how Joy has been suspiciously missing the first couple of episodes. And she was in the Arconia the night that Ben died or fell down the elevator shaft. So I do think there's the potential for her to do this. But boy, it feels early to put such a big target on her.
That's where I get always a little bit tripped up, is if they're pointing the finger at someone so early in the season, it almost feels impossible for it to be that person, like a Kimber, or they are setting it up so that they can point fingers at everyone else and then circle back to that character later in the season. So yeah, I don't really know. I do think that this is just a really fun storyline, though, to see how Charles is going to get out of this next episode, because he has now proposed to someone that he didn't want to propose to. And I can't imagine that suddenly she's just going to become unobsessed with fish. So all of these problems are going to persist. And Charles doesn't necessarily really do confrontation well. So I think this is a really fun hook to give him. I agree with you in that. Because of this episode, I was much more intrigued by Charles's storyline than I had been previously.
Yeah, so let's talk about the other side of that, which is, we've talked about the joy of it all. Let's talk about the agony of getting on stage and having to sing a Patter song, which is apparently, I wrote down the exact quote here. It is a speed singing information dump that they give to the guy that can't sing. It's basically a rap.
Well, this is what intrigues me because, okay, Troy, you obviously, you've done improv. I feel like you are more well-versed in theater than I am. I guess I'm confused why, if someone struggles with, like, singing, how are they going to be better at, like, rapping? It seems like maybe those two kind of go hand in hand in a way of, like, you probably wouldn't be good at either.
Yes. Well, so the origins of a lot of Patter songs come from Gilbert and Sullivan. So that's where you would take someone who is like a comic actor. Usually it is an older man who maybe doesn't have the same range, doesn't sing as much vocally, but they have very good enunciation. They're a very good performer still. And you give them a tongue twister. You know, the classic Patter song is, "I am the very model of a modern major general." You know, and all that comes after that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen more recent ones where it's given to a highly skilled performer, something like Not Getting Married Today from Company, where, you know, you try and sing that and it is, boy, that's a tongue twister. So I see what the joke or the origin of it, you know, it has some basis in reality, but the truth is, like, you know, they give it to Charles because it's going to be fun to watch us watch Charles try to do this. The opening line, "Which of the Pickwick triplets did it?" What a fantastic little turn of phrase. And just the moment of him walking out on stage with the, like, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
I was already giggling. That was the funniest part of the episode for me.
I think my favorite part was when he mimes making omelets when he's singing it, because he doesn't know any other way to go to his happy place. And Oliver is besides himself. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's one of those, you build a crutch for yourself, and when someone takes out that, you just fall on your face. Mm-hmm. I have to assume, based on what you've said, you've not been in the white room yourself. You've not experienced.
Is this a real thing? Is my question. Like, is this a known thing in the theater?
It is not something that I had ever heard referred to, like, in that way. Others who are more knowledgeable, maybe Zed or others who are listening who live in around the theater, could talk about this more. With improv, we've definitely like talked about, you know, scenarios where you're in flow or you're like walking on clouds and other ways of talking about where you just, you know, and this is true when you're podcasting. Sometimes you just open your mouth, you trust the right thing to come out, you get done and you hope and pray you didn't say anything and that your pants are still on. Right.
I think this is me every time I podcast. Well, I think I just fully dissociate when I podcast because someone will come back to me and say, you said this on a podcast. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Sounds like something I'd say. I probably did say it. I don't remember saying it.
This is almost certainly true. I definitely have those moments where I'm like, did I just mess up the first word of this podcast? That totally didn't just happen here. Thanks, Josh. So excited to have you back. Rest and recover well. But yeah, look, sometimes you get on stage, the moment takes over, you say and do things you definitely did not expect. Having done a lot of improv, like I've definitely gotten into moments where I'm like, well, this went off the rails. But we certainly play it to hysterical extremes with Charles here. He wakes up, pants around his ankles, baby dolls strewn, and people looking at him with absolute horror at the things he has done and said. Now, I will say, come on, folks. Be a supportive theater community here. When your boy's going off the rails, you got to intervene. You got to throw out an X card or a red flag. Or you stop. We're in rehearsal here. Stop the presses. But yeah, just let him go.
There's a way to stop him before the pants come off, I think. You know, there is a way to intervene. Is it Howard who says he needs to talk to his therapist?
That's right. That's right. But I have fantastic moments. And I think it gave us some insight into where Charles is as a character. Mm-hmm. And also another fun way for us to delay the inevitable Razzle Dazzle musical debut while still showing progress on that musical.
Absolutely. I think we need to talk about Oliver, though, because... Yeah. Here's my question. I know you and Josh were a bit like, oh, okay, they're doing a Loretta Oliver like romance type of storyline here. I'm shocked that, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be. As someone who is tends towards the more dramatic side of things, dramatic leanings, I guess I shouldn't be super surprised. What? I shouldn't be super surprised that Oliver says he's like in love with Loretta pretty much overnight. But I was like, you've got to be kidding me, man. You've known her for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, this is like freshman college vibes, isn't it? Like, yes. We just met and we're attached at the hip for the rest of our time here. Yeah, but I also, you know, look, when you find your person, they've obviously spent a lot of time together in rehearsal. Meryl Streep is an incredible actress.
It is Meryl Streep.
It is Meryl Streep. I mean, I know it's Loretta, but it's also Meryl Streep. And if you got a chance to lock that down, like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, like, Oliver is so awkward. He's trying to figure out how to ask her out and where to go. And I find this fun. I find this endearing and enjoyable, even if it's a little over the top and a little unbelievable.
Yeah, and my big problem is I am the Mabel who is like, focus on the murder, people. What are we doing here? Right? Oliver has pertinent information. He is the closest to the cast, probably. Like, maybe Charles, but Charles isn't always someone who's super personable and doesn't really know the inner workings of everyone's personality in the way Oliver would. And so I'm like, you have important information about Kimber. Mabel mm-hmm. is trying to figure this thing out. And he is just head in the clouds in love with Loretta. And he's not focusing. Focus, Oliver. Focus.
Well, this brings up a question from Quinn. They say, doesn't it feel super quick for anyone else that Oliver is so in love with Loretta? I know she's Meryl Streep. Oh, that's what I was going to say. I know she's Meryl Streep. But this does feel like it's bound to end poorly. Jess, how poorly could this end for Oliver?
I think we're on a spectrum of Meryl Streep is the killer.
Uh-huh. In which case,
very worst
real
end.
Bad.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Which is very, it's funny if it ends up being true, because then if we think about it, like, okay, Charles had a girlfriend who was a murderer, yes. And then we have Oliver as a girlfriend who's a murderer. But I think that's the worst case scenario. Best case, they fall in love and get married and live happily ever after. But I mean, it, again, it's Meryl freaking Streep, and I think we get her for one season and one season only, and therefore it can't possibly end well.
Okay, okay. Hear me out, Jess. Yeah. New theory time.
Love it.
Double date murderers. Okay, this entire season, we've had Mabel, who's feeling distant from her boys. She's having to move out of the Arconia. No one's wanting to follow the leads with her. Charles is in this play. Oliver's leading this play. She's feeling more and more disconnected from the Only Murders trio. Mm-hmm. What is a surefire way of bringing Charles and Oliver back to Mabel, but then to have both of their relationships be the killer this time? One of them was done by Loretta. Ooh. One of them was done by Joy. And at the end, both of my boys are in trouble.
That is fascinating. You know what I didn't even think about either is, like, if we're shipping Mabel and Taubert from their, like, little armoire interaction, theoretically, all three of our Only Murders trio could be tied to a potential suspect.
Ooh, now I'm liking this even more. So are they going to stand around trying to convince each other that the other person's partner did it when, in fact, like, all three of them are culpable?
How great is that scene, right? Oh, that it almost feels really like fun. They have to do it.
It's like, no, not my person. I couldn't be dating a killer. You've already dated a killer, right?
It's like, excuse me, have you seen Taubert's eyeballs? It can't be him. He's so gorgeous.
That's right. Exactly. So this could be very fun. I mean, we've now implicated, I think, right very near the top of our suspect list, right next to Dickie, I'll say, are all three people who appear to have some sort of varying romantic connection with our three primaries.
Yes.
It makes it a little bit tropish, but could be very fun if there's multiple of them implicated.
I think even if it doesn't end up being any of the three, I still think it's really fascinating to play around with the romantic, you know, there's the romantic side of things. And then how could it possibly be this person when they're so lovely, right? It just seems, it does seem like first we're going to be going to Joy as, like, suspect number one, but it wouldn't surprise me to end up on the other two as potential options as well, given A, they're involved in all of this, right? They all have means, motive, opportunity, all of those things. And we're not going to bring, you know, Jesse Williams and Meryl Streep on the show and then not play around with the idea of them being murderers. So
I think that's true. I do think that we, just like we did with Cara Delevingne last season, even if they don't turn out to be the murderers, it's going to be fun to give them an opportunity to really shine in the limelight and really be the chief suspect for a little while. Mm-hmm. Speaking of people who were in the limelight and then have spent the last year out of the limelight, or maybe in a more of an opalescent soft glow light, this episode also had the return of Cinda Canning, and what I would call the goopification of Cinda Canning. She has been continuing or created a new persona for herself, and has now engaged Mabel after multiple attempts. We finally have a conversation between those two. Jess, thoughts on the return of Tina Fey as Cinda Canning after what happened in season two, now where we are in season three? How are you feeling about that?
I love this. I was shocked. I had no idea Tina Fey was going to be guest starring on this season. I loved what they did to her, like this, like, glow up, if you will. Like you said, the goopification of this character was so funny. And I do think it was an interesting time for Mabel to be tempted, right? Because Cinda Canning, for whatever you want to say about her, she gets results. She is laser focused. And she knows well enough to know that Mabel is on the case. She knows Mabel's onto something. She can sense that Mabel has her sights set on some, like, resolving some sort of murder. And Cinda Canning is a serious partner, unlike Charles and Oliver, who are very distracted at this point, right? It would be really easy for Mabel to say, yes, they're my friends. To quote a lovely HBO show, they're not serious people. They're not focused on what Mabel is focused on. So I thought this was a really fascinating time for her to be approached by Cinda Canning. And I have to imagine this isn't the last we're going to see of Cinda Canning. You're not going to bring her back for one episode.
Gosh, I hope not. The immediate... the listening of the voice in the overdub, I was like, who was that? Took me a moment. And then when we finally saw her with the blonde hair and the cream, it just was like, you immediately knew everything, everything about the story that was being told of Senda in the last year. Is fantastic writing, an incredible performance. But then the scene between Tina Fey and Selena Gomez, Mabel and Senda here, that is what I love about this show, that you can pull together some of these like wackadoodle ungrounded characters and put them in front of Mabel and like make for a really good conversation. So my question is, did Mabel make a mistake by turning down Senda? I mean, I know the 2-0s was a bit too much, but you know, if you're offering to have someone write a check for you to produce a podcast and your co-hosts are bailing on you, like, should she have made the deal with the devil she knew?
Gosh, it's really tough. I think the thing to remember with podcasting specifically is that chemistry is really, really important to the product.
Chemistry.
And I don't know that she has that chemistry with Senda Canning, right? She knows she has it with her boys. She's got her boys. And I think you have to trust the people you're working with, especially when it comes to like, you're talking murder here. This is serious. This isn't a television show recap. You know, this is murder.
What? Are you saying what we're doing here is not serious business?
We're because not
I have notes.
People.
Okay. I've been reading off of them. All right. You've prepared things. Yes. We're recording. This is on YouTube. Jess,
this is fancy. This is the high end.
This is the high end. By the way, check us out on YouTube. We got a video if you ever want to know what we look like.
See our lovely faces. Go.
Smile for the cameras.
but I do think it makes sense to me that I think she might reach her breaking point. I don't think she's there yet, right? Like, is there a chance Senda comes back later and is like, hey, remember that offer? Remove a zero and we're still game. You know, it's possible that that happens. Or is it possible that Senda is now going to be competing with Mabel?
And
to solve
that's
this?
Absolutely. I think you're right. That is the outcome of that scene, right? Yes, we've planted a seed whereby Mabel could come back when things get really challenging and she could say, you know what? I don't need you guys. Like, I've got other options in front of me, and go make the offer or take the offer from Senda. I think what's more likely here is now she hears that there's another murder that is still unsolved, because I think it's easy for us to forget as the viewers of the season that the public thinks that the murder of Ben Glenroy has been solved.
Right.
Right. They got the creeper Greg. It's only us and the podcasters who know that it likely was not him. So now that Senda knows this, is she going to be like, you know, a dog, a bloodhound on the path looking for killers? And what sort of implications is that going to bring about? I'm very interested in that.
Definitely. I think that it's only a matter of time, if Mabel doesn't solve this quickly, that Senda Canning is going to, she wants the money regardless of who's involved. Obviously, Mabel is her number one choice. Doesn't mean she's not going to have a number two option. And my question is, because I have a theory for who she might approach to get on her side.
Okay.
And I think it could cause major conflict. Someone who also is involved in behind the scenes work here, who may or may not have some sort of information on the behind the scenes of the dressing room stuff, and also would really piss off Mabel. Could she approach Talbert?
Ooh. See, now I thought you were going to say someone else, but that could be good, because
he's a documentarian, right? Like,
yeah, he's got information, right? That's exactly where I would go if I were Senda. I'm like, find the person who's already recording material that I can splice and dice into a particular episode. That could be good. That could cause some issues. For some reason, my brain wanted you to say something different, and I'm going to share this now because I've been looking for an opportunity to bring back up this person, because they are flying so off the radar right now. Just like, not even, nary a mention, not a steak pick or a baked potato pick, not a peas or carrots or a sticky toffee pudding pick. Howard. Let's talk about Howard for just a second. Do I think he's likely to kill someone at this point? No. But also, he's here. every episode. He's got the keys to the kingdom. He didn't get cast. He's upset about Ben and other things. Like, I pointed the finger at Howard at the start of last season for last season's murder. So I don't want to be a dog with a bone about it. But I just, I regret not mentioning Joy last episode. And I just have to get it out there right now. We got another person with tons of access. And we haven't talked about him yet.
This is true. And I guess I really was counting him out because he's not new, if that makes sense. It not, you know, it just feels like it should be one of this new crew. But you're right. He's flying under the radar so far. He's like fairly invisible this season, beyond the occasional little comment here or there. His love of Mabel's sweaters. I really loved that small detail of that's why he loved them. Oh,
so
in.
Great. Well, and that's what got it back on my radar, because I was like, I forgot how much I love him as a character. Also, I forgot he was a character.
Yes. It could be. I feel like they'd really have to amp up his visibility over the next few episodes for me to consider him a suspect, because I think, like, as Dwight Schrute in The Office always says, it's like, well, it has to be the person you most medium suspect. And if we're barely seeing Howard, I'm not suspecting him at all because I'm not remembering he's around. So I think they'd really have to give us something, especially motive, right? Like, why would he do that? Does he also hate Ben Glenroy? It seems like there's no shortage of people who hated him. So yeah.
Look, he's not a top five pick for me. I just want to make sure he's on the board. And that,
yeah, you're like, I need this on the record.
Yeah, look, I'm like playing the roulette game where I've put like stacks on certain people and then the wheel keeps spinning. And I'm like, oh, maybe just one more here. Also, one more chip. Also 19 and also 32. It could be that. Clearly, I'm a very bad gambler. Play poker with me. Don't play roulette. Well, then, just speaking of bets and gambling, let's just do one quick check-in on the steak picks and potato picks that Josh and I had. And I'm curious if I can get your help in doing a little bit of a stock watch, a little stock pot watch.
Okay.
After the end of episode 4 here and what we've seen, has their stock of being a killer risen or fallen compared to where we were coming in? So let's start with Josh's steak pick, Tobbert, which he's definitely written in here as Robert, but that is not his name.
And I will say, you know what? I'm going to stick up for Josh here because I write the notes for these episodes. Every time I write Tobbert, my Google Docs is like, do you mean Robert? No, I don't. I mean Tobbert. I want Google to understand why it's Tobbert.
So is Google conspiring to get Tobbert off the watch list to suppress his interest? I think that's it. Well, so Tobbert, has Tobbert's stock watch gone up, down, or neutral this episode? What do you think?
I feel like fairly neutral, right? We don't really see him at all.
We got nothing from him, right?
Yeah, which could mean that, like, oh, he's taking a little bit of rest. He's taking a little bit of rest, and then spike in visibility soon. But I would say, like, no, we're fairly neutral this episode.
I agree. We look at my stake pick of Dickie. I think we also got to look at that as fairly neutral. Like, no news is no news in this situation. I still find him very suspect, but he's not the person with the lipstick. So unless there's something that we haven't learned yet, like, I'd say pretty neutral.
I also feel like it's unlikely, even if we're thinking, okay, it's Joy's lipstick, but who could have written the message if it wasn't Joy and it's just her lipstick happens to be there or something? I can't imagine Dickie as Ben's brother is writing effing pig in lipstick on a mirror. Like, it doesn't feel very brotherly to me. It feels like you'd be arguing with your brother face to face, yelling at him, not writing on his mirror in lipstick.
Yeah, not with lipstick. Certain brothers you can maybe do that with, but yeah, you're more likely to get in a wrestling fight or something.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, true. Would you poison your brother? I don't think you would. I really don't think you would. I think you'd let someone poison your brother.
Yeah. I guess.
By the way, hi to my brother Doug if you're listening to this. I would never poison you. Let me state this for the record.
Would you poison your brother? Nah.
Nah. But I would let someone poison you for the record. Murder. Okay, so Dickie, neutral. Let's just go through Loretta, the producers, Donna and Clifford. Anything up or down with either of them?
Gosh, it feels like all of these picks were not really involved in this episode. Like, we get mention of Loretta, of course, but not a ton of them make an appearance.
No, which means I guess we have to say that the field has risen with the introduction of Joy and learning more about, I guess, Kimber. Somewhat.
Yeah, Kimber's stock has fallen, certainly. Mm-hmm. It seems like, I mean, it makes sense to me that she's upset with Ben because he didn't want to endorse her serum, right? That tracks to me. That I don't think she's lying about that.
Okay, one last big theory here. New character enters the arena here. We gotta throw the suspect veil over them. Cinda Canning. Is there any chance that Poppy, after creating a difficult moment with a coworker, as Cinda described it, has now inspired Cinda to, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the Canning tree here. Maybe she has created a murder in order to bring back her return to podcasting. What do you think?
This seems a little far-fetched because she'd have to be there. And we had no, there's been nothing to suggest that she was at either location.
Yeah, okay. Grasping for straws here. But, you know,
but I do
we
like
are turning
idea,
over every stone possible.
I do like the idea, though, as you all suggested on the podcast, that it could be two different people with the two different attempts, right? Mm. One at the theater and then one in the elevator.
And do we
like
think
that
they're
idea.
Coordinated in some way? Or do you think they may be unrelated?
I think it's more fun if they're unrelated.
I think so, too. I'm holding out so desperately for an Agatha Christie-style ending where we just are like, seven people want to kill him, and they just all piled on in different ways without knowing it. I just think that'd be a fun ending. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was totally wrong in season two, and we ended up with a fun ending in season two. So what the heck do I know? Oh,
yeah.
Goodness. Jess, is there anything else in episode 4 of season 3 that we have not covered yet that we need to make sure we get on the record before we come to a wrap on this?
I'm really loving this season. I think it's so much fun. I think if I had one note, it's that everything needs more Paul Rudd. So I'm looking forward to hopefully getting some more flashbacks or more ghost chats with Mabel, that awful, awful frosted tips look on Ben Glenn Gunroy.
Little girl cop action.
Yes. Yeah. What is it? Cobro.
Cobro. We need more of the Cobro.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying this season. I will say, like, season two wasn't as good for me. I would say I still enjoyed it, but I think season three has, like, it really pulled me back in.
I'm so glad. It's going to pull you back in and then throw you down an elevator shaft, Jess. No, I would not wish that upon you, obviously. Thank you so, so much for being here and for filling in. We stayed a little bit more on the rails than I think Josh and I would, but we covered lots of important topics. We went into a white, or I guess you could say a periwinkle room of our own if you're watching the video. Well, if you would like to follow along with us as we go through more episodes of Only Murders in the Building, please subscribe by visiting us at postshowrecaps.com/subscribe. It is very, very helpful at the start of a season for us to get some subscribers, some downloads, some viewers, so people can help find us. You can also write a review if you'd like and let people know. You know, you could write a review like Tobert did of the Only Murders podcast and let us know what you really think. Of course, if you want to listen to this episode and others ad-free, you can become a patron. Go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. And we will do some more live recording of video as the season goes on. We may also do some patron feedback shows. If you want to reach out to me, you can reach me on the X or the Twitter or whatever the heck we're calling it. At DJ LaBelle Klein. Josh is at Round Howard. Jess, where can people find you?
You could find me at the Jess Sterling.
And you could also reach out to at Post Show Recaps. Always happy to hear from you there. Jess, I'm thrilled. Thank you so much for coming here and being a guest. Next episode, we will dive into episode 5. Ah, Love.
What a thrilling title.
What a thrilling title. I'm not going to ask you to make any predictions on this one. But just looking at a screen cap and a title, I'm looking forward to some Streep. Give me more Meryl, baby. With that, thank you so much for listening. We're going to wrap it up here on post-show recaps. And until next time, I ask you this question. Which of the pick, which triplets did it? Which of the triplets did it? I don't know the lyrics. I don't know this, but I'm going to give you...
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.